For those of you who weren't back in the days that I'm sorry you missed, that was the SNCC Freedom Singers with Oginga Nodinga, who was a great black revolutionary, or, no, a Kenyan revolutionary. And right now, we're on the phone with activist attorney Kamau Carl Franklin. How you doing, Carl?
I'm doing okay.
How you doing, Kamau?
Nice to talk to you again.
Yeah, I mean, pretty terrible, huh? I mean, let's just start with how horrible that people now my age who went through the 60s, who in my case also went to prison for my political beliefs, came out, raised your families, maybe not as in a warrior mode as you were in the 30s, but you know, in your personal 30s, but still ready to fight, living with the terror that these people may come back from you at any time, come after you. Tell us about the case. I'm just going to read one thing on the facts, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Police in California, New York, and Florida arrested 8 former Black Panthers earlier this week on charges related to the 1971 killing of a San Francisco police officer, Richard Brown, Richard O'Neill, Ray Boudreau, and Henry Watson Jones, arrested in California. Francisco Torres was arrested in Queens, New York. Harold Taylor was arrested in Florida. 2 men already in jail, Herman Bell and Halil Muntakim, were also charged. A 9th man, Ronald Stanley Bridgeforth, is still being sought. The men were charged with the murder of Sergeant John Young and conspiracy to commit murder for a string of attacks on other officers. Now, you are a civil rights attorney, a human rights attorney. What's the civil rights angle here? Why is this a civil rights violation?
On several levels, I guess, the first and foremost that has to do with this particular cases. These men have already been, in the past, arrested in terms of this particular matter. And if anybody is familiar with the history, the reason why the charges were dropped against these men already once was because they were tortured while in custody of the New Orleans Police Department with the cooperation of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. One particular person who was arrested at the time, Reuben Scott, actually offered sort of a fanciful tale about what took place, and he also was tortured tremendously, and later came out and told people that he was tortured. And it was through this information coming out that a judge in this particular matter dropped the charges, dismissed all charges against all of these folks over 20, 25 years ago. So this was something that, you know, that they thought was behind them. And as you were speaking about a little earlier, they had moved on with their lives. And it wasn't until recently, over the last couple of years, that they began to really talk about what took place with them, you know, a couple of decades ago, particularly with what happened in Guantanamo. There was a link made through the Center for Constitutional Rights between the activists and revolutionaries who were tortured in the past with folks who've been tortured today and called terrorists. And so these men started coming out and talking about what took place, what happened with them, how the terrorism charge was put against them, and then they were tortured, and how today terrorist charges are put against other people, at least the name-calling and such, and then these folks are tortured. And the connections, you know, that took place back then and now, and in a lot of cases, the things that happened to these gentlemen 20-some-odd years ago have been a lot more violent than what's taking place today in Guantanamo Bay. So this is a case of arrests being made in the past based on torture, and no real new evidence has been discovered, but they're using the same witness that they used before to try to re-indict these gentlemen, and actually there haven't been any indictments. They've just been arrested and charged, even though a grand jury's been convening for well over a year on this. So we think that is the first and foremost thing that people need to look at in thinking about these cases.
Well, let me ask you this. In terms of the issue of torture, because sometimes it's just thrown out as a word. I've read some of the actual testimony in preparation for this show. I could read some, but perhaps you'd like to tell people what happened to them in New Orleans. What did the torture look like?
It was a mixture of things that these folks had suffered through. Everything from the threat of cattle prods and being electrocuted, to water torture, to threats of being killed, and then classic torture techniques, the police constant beatings. And one of the things that they did was not to hit them in the face, but to hit them in other parts of their body. And then classic torture technique is to leave them in alone and then have other people come in who are going to play basically good cop, bad cop, and those other people would be the Federal Bureau of Investigation agents who would come in and try to say, look, if you say this, if you say that, if you do this, if you do that, then, we'll let you go, or we'll stop these activities from taking place. And once again, one person, I think, reached a breaking point, basically, and started just saying everything and anything he could to stop the beatings from taking place. And Mr. Scott has changed his story 5 times on this. And so it's, he's not a credible witness. And more importantly, as someone has said earlier, not only is he a tortured victim, but he's a tortured soul who's been through a lot and is being used again by police agencies to sort of wrap up an old case and try to claim that they're doing some important investigative work here, when really what they're doing is retrying something that's really been put to bed and destroying lives.
Well, we're on the show with Kamal called Franklin. Kamal, one of the things I want to ask you about is that this is the first time I understood the connection better, having worked with some of the people at the Freedom Archives and wanting to put together this documentary, Legacy of Torture, The War Against the Black Liberation Movement, and help generate an event in Los Angeles. It sounds like one of the reasons that these men are now being attacked is because they had the courage to speak out against the terror that happened to them, and speak out against the now present war of terror. So does it look like the government is going out of both to crush what's left of the Black Panther Party, but also anybody from that period who's willing to take a stand against the war in Iraq, the imprisonment?
Yeah, we think these are part of continued efforts by both state government and federal government agencies to, one, to continue to tarnish the image of the civil rights movement and the Black Power movement, and particularly the Black Panther Party, and two, to punish these men for, once again, as you just stated, coming out and linking the atrocities of Abu Ghraib with the atrocities that they suffered, to show that this kind of violence that happens to non-citizens also happens to citizens, and that this is nothing new in terms of what extents the U.S. will go to in order to, once again, beat confessions out of people and or to try to claim any justification for all of their activities or any activities they engage in. So we definitely think that this is linked to not only the past activism of these folks, but also to what's happening presently in the world.
Well, Kamal, one of the things, and you work with the Center for Constitutional Rights, is that correct?
Yes.
One of the things that's been worrying me is that, in one book I wrote, I said that the United States practices fascism in the third world, semi-fascism against black people, and bourgeois democracy for whites. But that's changing. I mean, that whole thing is changing, where they're practicing ultra-fascism in the third world, fascism against black people, and I don't know what, but a growing police state against everyone, because in order to pursue this war on terror, they can't even allow, at least under the Bush administration, bourgeois democracy. The reason I raise that is not just as a framing, not as an abstract question, is in that Alberto Gonzalez is arguing directly that torture is the right of the United States in this war. Is it possible that the judges, is this going to be seen by the Ninth Circuit? Who's going to be taking the case?
This particular case?
Yeah.
This particular case is going to be a state case.
Is a state?
It's going to be heard in San Francisco State Court.
All right.
Even though there were federal authorities involved in the investigation,
right,
of this case.
So if we go to state court, how persuasive is the charge of terrorism? I'm sorry, is the charge of terrorizing them through the use of torture? How much is the strength of the inadmissibility of evidence still operative in what's left of this bourgeois democracy we supposedly live in?
Well, I mean, that was actually kind of an interesting slip, because obviously we think this is part and parcel to what the government strategy will be, is to use sort of the terrorist card, right, to try to claim that the Black Panthers was this terrorist organization, and that anything affiliated with the Black Panthers was a terrorist organization, and to scare people into particularly the jury pool in California, into believing, well, it doesn't make a difference what the government did to these people because these people belong to groups that were radical groups. So these belong to groups that supported fighting the government through organizing the people. So we think that that's going to be their strategy, and that was they're going to try to say that, one, they're going to try to say that it didn't make a difference what they did in terms of what they did to these folks. Only thing that matters is that they had one particular person come out and confess. And I think that's going to be, it may not be a strong legal argument, but it may be a strong sort of public persuasive argument. I think that's what they're hoping for. They're hoping that they can scare people into giving up their rights, giving up their civil rights and their human rights.
Well, I would go a little further. That's not even scaring. In my opinion, the American people don't have much respect for rights at all. So they're willing to give up certainly black people's rights at a moment's notice, leftist rights at a moment's notice. I don't believe that there's this vast wellspring of decency among the American people. I think that the American people have a very pre-fascist orientation. So what are the attorneys going to do? And looking at the individual, it looked like, without knowing who they were, that each of them have retained what looks like very good counsel. Is that true?
Yeah. Because this case has been going on for approximately a year, each person knew that you know, there was potential that these indictments would be coming down, or the indictments would be coming down, or arrests would be made. So folks did get attorneys. Everyone is well represented with attorneys who have a long history with dealing with movement cases and movement issues. Folks have a long history with working with Panthers. So they are well represented both on the West Coast, and some of the folks who were arrested out here well represented by attorneys out here until potentially they're extradited out to the West Coast.
Well,
let me just say, I don't disagree with your analysis either of the American public.
No, that's good. And but given that, you know, let me say the other aspect of it. I raise the general because I'm so tired of this. Oh, if the American people only knew that there was slavery, you know, if the American people only knew that there were, you know, 1.5 million black people in prison. No, they know it. That's how they got there, you know, right? Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, there is this hopeful minority within the U.S. population that's been consistently, almost shockingly, anti-racist, anti-imperialist. That's the other side of this. Otherwise, we wouldn't have any theory of organizing. It seems to me, certainly on a personal level, I can make a commitment that I want to fight on this. This is on a very, it almost feels like fighting for my own life, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like everything I've worked for, they're going to knock my door down. But also, I love these brothers without even knowing them that well. It seems like maybe this is the case they're going to be sorry they took. How do we make them feel that way?
Well, we make them feel that way by doing a number of things. One is your radio show, which I think is a great resource to the general community. And once again, even though I agree with your analysis, I think it's important that we continue to put this kind of information out there for the public so they can at the very least begin to think and to question. You know, at some point, the American support for the war was overwhelming in Iraq, for instance.
That's right.
And now that support is down to 15%. So we do think that by getting more information out to the public about what these arrests are about, who these men are, what the evidence supposedly is against them, and how that evidence was obtained, that we can do something to try to influence public opinion, try to get people out into the streets beyond just the activist community, which, of course, is the front line for us, but to get other people out in the street also so that, yes, they can regret the very fact that they brought this case and that we can present evidence not only in court but in the court of public opinion about what took place to these men and why this is a bogus case. So working strategies that get us as much media as possible, as much opportunity to talk to people as possible is probably the road that we're going to go down in the future out there in the West Coast and all over the country.
Well, we promise, and I say we meaning myself, co-host Damon Azali and Tammy Liu and Manuel Criollo, we like to take, you know, like we did with Katrina, we stayed on it. We don't just take a story and say, well, thanks a lot, I'll see you in a year. So we will stay on the case. Do they have a name? Are they the San Francisco 8 or 9? Are they the Freedom Fighters yet? Do they have...
At this point, I don't think they've been designated a name, either through legal counsel or by kind of the activist community. But if you put that out there, that might be the one that sticks.
All right, well...
I didn't mean to suggest to people that in the near future they go to the website of the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement, which is mxgm.org, and soon there will be some more information put up there about who these brothers are and what their case is about. So some general information that people can download and use in terms of organizing efforts to get folks more involved in what's happening and let people know the information that's out there on them.
Well, we also work very closely with Brother Kali Okuno, who's we've worked with on the... I thought one thing was very important, and I would like you to give the information, is I was when I was in prison, the letters, the guards just hated those letters. You know, just letters mattered a lot. And I saw that we can write to most of the defendants at that point. How do we get the addresses of the brothers who were, as I understand it, they're presently in jail, not in prison?
Exactly.
They're awaiting trial. They're trying to make bail. What has bail been set at?
In some cases, bail has been set as high as $3 million.
Right.
You don't expect anyone to make bail before a trial that happens.
Really?
At this stage. I don't have the information to the police, the holding jail or center in San Francisco, and so hopefully someone can get that to you. But what folks can do, particularly for the two men who are here in New York, Herman Bell and Anthony Bottom, is go to Jericho website, which is a political prisoner support committee. And as you might have briefly mentioned, Herman Bell and Jaleel Montekin are both political prisoners in New York who were both in jail at the time that this incident took place. So, but yet they're still being charged with murder counts. But those folks are in New York, and people can go check out the Jericho website and get their addresses, and they would respond back and love to receive letters of support. So we really do encourage that for folks.
Well, one thing I just want to point out is, this is Eric Mann. I'm the co-host of Voices from the Frontlines. I'm on the phone with Kamau Carl Franklin, who's one of the attorneys. Are you representing any individual clients, or are you just representing the broader legal infrastructure for all the attorneys?
The broader legal infrastructure, yeah. Because this is a California-based case, these men will require counsel who are based in California for the most part.
Okay. Now, how do we reach the Center for Constitutional Rights?
The best way to reach the center is through their website, where they do also have phone number and email address for folks who want to get more information about the center itself. And then the best way, once again, for people to find out some more information about these particular this particular case and other political prisoners will be to research the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement website. I don't think at this time all the information on this particular case is up, but it should be up in a matter of days.
Well, let me end with a couple of things. I mean, on behalf of the Labor Community Strategy Center, not just myself, I know that we're committed to being an active participant in this. We've already been in touch with the Freedom Archives people, Claude and others, to want to co-sponsor an event in Los Angeles with the new documentary, Legacy of Torture, The War Against the Black Liberation Movement. So the first thing, if we can just go back, is to understand that first, these great men joined the Black Panther Party, which they should be very proud of. Secondly, they did not commit the crime of which they were accused. That's pretty obvious. Third, they were tortured in order to try to get their confessions. Fourth, their confessions were already thrown out of court because it was tortured. They are now being tortured throughout their whole life by being essentially chased by the police state, even though some of them have been working as social workers, gang interdiction. One has even been working with the district attorney's office in trying to help gang youth. So the only crime they've committed is not become the repudiators, is not become the tired, dead on their feet, former leftists who are now in the Democratic Party, closet leftists who are now working against immigrant rights, working against the black movement. So if you just make it physically into your 50s and 60s and keep your political revolutionary views alive, that makes you an enemy of the state.
Exactly. No, I couldn't say that better. That's exactly what's happening right now.
So we got to make this case big, is what I'm saying. Now, listen, there's some folks listening out here. This is in some ways a finite cause that you could really get involved in. So why don't you send an email, if you're interested, to info@thestrategycenter.org as one place. Also, look up the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement, is it?
Yes, mxgm.org.
mxgm.org as a second place. Look up Center for Constitutional Rights as a third place. All of us will get these facts more up to date on our websites. Our website is www.thestrategycenter.org. In the next week, you'll be getting more of this. They've already been on Democracy Now! And Kamau, I want to have you back on the show. So the question I'd ask you to end is, What's the last thing you would ask people? We have about 1 minute. What should the folks do?
I think the folks should start organizing events, press releases, campaigns, mobilizations, everything that we know how to do, phone calls, whatever it takes to start putting pressure on San Francisco DA to drop these charges, to start putting the word out about what actually took place and why these charges are going forward at this particular point in time in history, what these men have suffered through. Let people know, because we think it's very, very important right now that the California public in particular become very knowledgeable about the facts of this case. We think that is extremely important in terms of helping these men in the future.
Thank you, Kamau. This ends today's program of Voices from the Front Lines. This is your host, Eric Mann. Get some music on. Can we hear some music, folks? I'd like to thank our guests, Glenn Ford and Kamau Carl Franklin. Today we had music from Core and the SNCC Freedom Singers and Patato. I'd like to thank our producer, Alan Minsky, our production assistant, Lisa Adler, our engineer, Jose Juan Bustamante, and we'll see you next week from Voices from the Frontlines Radio. Up next is Beneath the Surface with Susie Wiseman. It's been a really good show for me in terms of from Barack Obama to the black prisoners. Let's keep freedom alive. Let's build the movement. We'll talk to you next week.